Hello and welcome to your Dogwood podcast for the last week of March. We got a great show for you today. Lots going on. I'm your host, Kai Nagata. Coming up in a minute, the ever-expanding scandal over political donations in British Columbia. With the election just a few weeks away, this beast is growing tentacles. Lisa Sammartino will be here to untangle the story and get us all caught up. Tied to that, of course, is Kinder Morgan, now under investigation by the RCMP for potential illegal donations to politicians. Sophie Harrison was in the news last week calling on Premier Clark to give Kinder Morgan's money back. She'll be here with the latest on the pipeline and oil tanker fight. Erie Ross will drop by to tell us more about her idea to put the U.S. coal industry in a chokehold. And finally, a new wood dogger joined the pack this month, Mike Soron. Mike is actually an Albertan, born and raised in Calgary, but he crossed the Rockies and found himself fighting the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion. We'll hear more about Mike's work organizing in some tough new turf. This is your Dogwood podcast for the final week of March. First up, the grotesque carnival of corruption that is political financing in BC. Lisa Sammartino is here with the latest. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, Kai.
Okay, I have to go on a bit of a rant here. The Globe and Mail reveals that lobbyists are making illegal donations on behalf of corporate clients who want to do business with the government. Then Elections BC calls in the RCMP to investigate. So literally the cops are investigating the political parties. And last week it turns out one of the candidates running for the Liberals, Kim Chan Logan, was one of those lobbyists who obscured the true source of donations, in this case from TELUS. And meanwhile, her boss, TELUS, pulls down $730 million in contracts from the provincial government. I am frothing at the mouth here. When are people going to start getting out the pitchforks?
Yeah, I think people are definitely very angry with these lobbyists that are saying, oh, we made a mistake.
A clerical error.
Yeah, you can accidentally...
10 years of clerical errors.
You can only accidentally rob a bank so many times before it's not an accident anymore, right? It's just kind of getting ridiculous. We're seeing it. I mean, you mentioned TELUS, the Globe and Mail article identified BC Salmon Farmer Association, Woodfibre LNG. DeSmog's also talked about tech donations. There are literally hundreds of thousands of dollars here that we don't know.
Tech, the coal company, one of the biggest donors to the BC Liberals.
They are the biggest donor to the BC Liberals. That's right. So it's just out of control. And then on top of that, we're seeing donations from dead KPMG executives.
Oh, dear.
It's an absolute carnival.
Okay. So this is called a straw donor. When a person makes a donation to a political party and then they get secretly reimbursed by a company. How big of a problem do you think this is in terms of the overall amount of money that the parties are raising?
I mean, we don't really know because we don't know if lobbyists are being reimbursed by their companies. And on top of that, this week, the Federal Conservative race has pointed out that people can use prepaid credit cards. And this is quite funny because in the Dogwood office, we were joking about if donations could be made from people like Genghis Khan or dead donations.
Yeah.
And
Count
we
Dracula.
Found out because at Dogwood we take jokes a little far. And we found out that this is actually a possibility. You can buy a prepaid credit card, register it in whatever name, and you don't need ID, and you can make payments to anything under that.
You just make
name.
Up an address, make up a
yeah.
name.
Yeah.
Untraceable.
Yeah. So we don't know if this is happening in BC, how prevalent it is. It's really scary, actually.
But just counting the lobbyist donations, I remember Dermot Travis saying from Integrity BC, there was up to $1.5 million that could have been illegally funneled from unknown corporate clients.
That's right, possibly.
So I remember in Quebec, I mean, this is how the whole corruption inquiry got started in Quebec, 6 or 7 years ago. This was the first clue. It was these straw donors, people who worked for these companies. And in this case, they had to use straw donors to get around the fact that corporations aren't allowed to donate in Quebec. So everybody would get a Christmas bonus, and then, you know, you'd see the cleaning lady's name and every single engineer donating the exact same amount, the maximum at the end of the year. So now that we know that this is happening in BC, looking at the Quebec playbook, what else do you think is under the surface?
Yeah, well, a couple months ago, I did a bit of an analysis on road paving contracts. It was inspired, of course, by the Quebec corruption scandal. I was like, what if this was happening here? So we looked at 134 government contracts for road paving and to put the barriers in the middle of the roads and to build sidewalks and things like that. 134 companies have received government contracts for this work from the last election until September 2016. Of those, 44 are donors, 90 are not. So about a third are donors to the BC Liberals. But those 44 donors are on average receive twice as many contracts as non-donating companies, and in total received $758 million, where non-donating companies in total, although there's, you know, three times as many, received $539 million. So this raised some red flags. Knowing the situation in Quebec, this week, Sonia Lebel, who was the Charbonneau Commission lead lawyer prosecuting that Quebec corruption scandal.
No, that exact problem, collusion in the construction industry.
She had some interesting things to say about donating contractors and public servants relationship and how that can develop into something a little dark.
When we think about corruption, okay, we view it as a criminal act where there's an envelope of cash money in a dark basement somewhere, then you're, well, it happens in life, but the system that we uncovered is more like I'm a contractor. I do a lot of business with the city. You're working for the city. So we've been doing basically business together for 20 years. I became your friend, but I'm still a vendor and you're still a civil servant with public money.
So that was Sonia Lebel, the former prosecutor for the Charbonneau Commission. That was the public inquiry into corruption in Quebec. She said in that speech that BC's lack of donation rules makes us vulnerable. Vulnerable to what?
Yeah, I think her description of the relationship that they saw in Quebec should raise some red flags for British Columbians. And we don't know that this is happening here, but our system makes it very easy for this to happen. These donors and people who are giving them work are developing really close relationships. David Eby, who sponsored Sonia Lebel to come out, the MLA for Vancouver Point Grey, explains here why British Columbians should see red flags in our own system.
When you think about it as a taxpayer, if we're paying a premium on every public contract, because there are these kinds of favors being done in BC, that would be a huge cost to taxpayers. So I think it's worth looking at and it's worth addressing the issue, because if we're paying this kind of premium, it's costing tax money that should be going to hospitals and schools and other public services, and we need to fix it.
So that was David Eby, MLA for Vancouver Point Grey. Lisa, the Vancouver Sun did an analysis this month. They found that indeed half of the top donors to the BC Liberals in the last decade are contractors working for the government. We're talking about $885 million in public money that went to these companies between 2007 and 2016. What's the bigger problem here for voters, for taxpayers?
Yeah, the Vancouver Sun showed us it's not just road pavers. We're seeing this in every facet of government work. We talked about earlier about TELUS, who is now their government relations person, who was donating in her own name, but it should have been under TELUS's name.
And is now a candidate.
Refuses to step down. We've talked about KPMG, same thing. Fasken Martineau, major law firm, CN Rail, HP, all these major office things that that of course the government needs a relationship with. These are all donors and receiving government contracts. And it should be pointed out, we've talked about in the past about how our system is actually worse than the Americans. In the States, you're not allowed to donate if you're not American, you're from outside the States. You're also not allowed to donate if you have a government contract relationship with the government. So this is ridiculous. We literally are the worst in the world because it's not illegal. And it comes back to taxpayers' pockets.
Right.
In the end, those relationships, they're not looking for the lowest cost. They're looking for these relationships that they already have with government contractors, and we're not paying competitive rates anymore.
And we're paying the padding. We're paying the extra cost for contracts to reflect the built-in price of political donations.
And we're paying the 75% potentially, there's a sliding scale, but the tax rebate that these companies get.
Exactly. All right. Troubling stuff, but thank you for staying on top of it. That was Lisa Sammartino, Dogwood's democracy campaigner. Thanks a lot, Lisa.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Dogwood Podcast. So continuing down this road, and not to be obsessive, but it's not just contracts that are valuable to government donors, it's permits. We have a situation where the ruling party is funded by the industries it regulates. And the poster child for that is Texas-based Kinder Morgan, famous now for funneling $771,168 to the BC Liberals before Christy Clark said yeehaw to the company's Trans Mountain expansion scheme. Sophie Harrison says, give it all back. She's here with me now. Hi, Sophie.
Hello, Kai.
So I saw you on TV this week in front of a giant novelty check. What was written on the front of it?
Right. So we got this massive 6-foot-long check made for a little rather fun stunt outside the cabinet office of the governing party. And on the check, it was supposedly from the BC Liberals, and we were asking them, as you said, to return all $771,168. There was a little plus next to it because, of course, those are the donations we know about. Now Kinder Morgan may be part of an RCMP investigation looking into companies illegally funneling money through lobbyists. So we are asking Christy Clark and her government to give back all the money they took, legal or otherwise, and actually put this project to a real environmental review.
That's a great way to get the premier's attention. Bring a check. Did you get a signature on it? Did she come out and
she did not sign. We had the line. It was waiting for her, but not yet.
So, okay, what can people do to make a stink about this? Because this is like in any other province, I have to say, people would be in the streets, torches and pitchforks. What can people do who want to pressure our politicians on this?
Totally. Well, in addition to having our fun massive check, we also delivered an open letter to the premier. So you can actually go sign that on the Dogwood website, add your name to the call that we want the premier to show us this pipeline decision was not bought. And so that's step one. I think the other thing to do is just really keep making a fuss about this in conversations with your neighbors and in the news. Dogwood's got some fun stunts coming up, putting billboards all around out in Kelowna or in Vancouver, really showing that these pipeline permits have been for sale and that perception will remain unless Christy Clark gives back all the money.
Yeah, that Kelowna billboard, it's got a hand holding out a bunch of cash and another hand reaching in, almost like... what's that famous painting where God's reaching out to touch Adam? Anyway, that's what it reminds me of. Really popular on Twitter so far, advertising the fact that BC pipeline decisions are for sale. Do you think public trust can actually be restored in pipeline decisions in BC? I mean, even if they gave all the money back, is the well just poisoned permanently?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think that distrust in our government's ability to look after our interests runs really deep in BC. There's some polling I saw just today that 89% of British Columbians under 35 believe that the BC government is only interested in helping its political donors and big business. That shows our democracy is deeply sick. And I think that perception goes not only because they're able to buy influence with these donations, but because these big business really have the ear of our government. New research showing that the fossil fuel lobby has been lobbying this governing party 14 times a day, Monday through Friday. It's absurd for years. So yeah, I do. I think giving back Kinder Morgan's money is a very first step in restoring public trust. Of course, one of the other things we're asking is for the BC government to actually put this project to a real environmental review, which they failed to do when they initially approved it. It's literally not seen a public health assessment at all. So we're asking, give back the money, put it to review just as a basic step to restore any level of faith that our government is not just bought by big money and interests.
What would a credible public review, I'm putting you on the spot here, but if you were premier, what would a credible public review look like for a big project like this?
Oh, so many things that we did not have with the NEB process. I mean, I would add, you should be using, you know, the latest science on what happens with diluted bitumen. I think climate change should be a part of the equation. And yeah, I think we need to be looking at the health assessments that really, the health impacts that really wasn't looked at when this project was initially approved. You look at the few studies that are out there and it's scary stuff thinking of you know, childhood cancer and like actually really devastating impacts that could happen for a project that's bringing very toxic substances through communities where millions of people live.
So as somebody who's aware of this, this nightmare, but is also facing an election that's coming up in less than, what is it, 6 weeks now? What is your plan A, and what's your plan B?
Well, of course, we're asking Christy Clark to give back this money. And I think that's a fun and important request just to, again, highlight the corrupt nature of this decision making. But I think what it comes down to it is that we need to get our friends out to vote.
Yeah, those people under 35, you mentioned.
89% believe that government decisions are bought by big interest and that this government only represents big business. I think that shows our democracy is sick. As a young person, I think we have a choice. I think we can stay at home and roll our eyes and buy into the cynicism that the BC Liberals are trying to breed. And if we do that, we let big money win. They'll keep running the show.
Which is what 3 out of 5 people did in our age category in the last election. 60% of people did not bother to cast a ballot.
So yeah, so I think that's what it comes down to this election is that we can't let the fossil fuel lobby continue to run our government. It's insulting. I'm pissed off. So I know not only am I committed to vote, I'm committed to making sure all my friends do. I'm committed to getting on the phone and calling my neighbors and people in my riding to make sure they're also aware and informed. I think the more of us turn out to vote who are concerned about these issues, the more we're going to be able to actually hold our government accountable. It's the only way we can do it.
So if you're listening and you want to help with that, you can sign up and help with getting out the vote at votebc.ca. And Sophie, what's your plan B?
Plan B. Well, of course, if Christy Clark manages to buy her way back into power, Dogwood has this amazing initiative strategy that we're working on. We know if she manages to win despite all this anger, it's because she'd out fundraise her opponents by
like 5-1.
Very large scale.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to be proposing our own bill. We're going to be signing up our neighbors to support it to make sure this project does not continue to move forward while, for instance, its proponent is under an RCMP investigation for illegal lobbying or it hasn't even seen a health assessment. I think if our government's not going to do what it takes to restore that public trust, we're going to have to take matters back into our own hands.
It is going to be fun and I'm excited to see what happens. Either way, it's going to be rock and roll. Thanks a lot, Sophie.
Thanks, Kai.
Sophie Harrison, Dogwood's pipeline and tanker campaigner. And thank you, dear listener, for checking out the Dogwood podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, and all the major podcast directories. Is that what they're called?
I guess so.
I'm old. We'll have a new episode up there every month. I'm Kai Nagata. With me today, Ari Ross from our Beyond Coal campaign. Hi, Ari.
Hello, Kai. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. I just got back from a fun demo on Burnaby Mountain with the Grim Reaper and a bunch of angry local residents who don't want to be incinerated.
That's a fair thing.
Yeah, right? So you had a big hit on the Tyee this week. The article you wrote there, it's been shared close to 3,000 times. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So it's called, if you want to look it up, Why Does U.S. Coal Get a Free Ride Through BC? Tell me about the article.
Well, this is a question that I've been pondering for the last 4 years while working on Dogwood's Beyond Coal campaign. So essentially, the article details, it paints a little bit of a picture for folks. So you imagine anybody who's gone down to the ferry terminal in Tawasin, which is where I'm from, has probably seen it. There's a large coal pile there at the West Shore terminals just beside the ferry. And trains from all over come there. So a lot of BC metallurgical coal is transported through West Shore for export to places where they make steel, like in, foundries maybe in Korea. And then as well, though, there's thermal coal that comes through BC's ports, and that's from Wyoming and Montana. And that's where our campaign has really been focusing around. This is coal that no ports on the West Coast of the United States want to accept. These companies have pretty dodgy financials and they have a lot of environmental and health risks that legislatures and state governments are saying, like, well, we don't know if you can actually pay for this to pay the cleanup, so we're not going to accept it. And here in BC, we allow these coal trains to come through, and they're not subjected to the carbon tax. That's something that BC coal producers are paying.
Right, because they're mining it outside of BC.
Exactly. So it can't be applied to thermal coal from the States. But the carbon tax that BC producers pay covers some of the costs that are associated with coal export. And also, I mean, it covers the costs of mining, and processing, and transportation. So if you see a 100-car train on your way down to the ferries, if it's metallurgical coal, it's going to be paying into the provincial
treasury
about $45,000. And then the thermal coal train is paying nothing if it's coming from the Powder River Basin. But there's a lot of health and environmental risks associated with coal exports. It's got a lot of, you know, it gets into the lungs of the people living on the train route.
Yeah.
All the coal dust is like has a major problem. It covers our crops and it covers our lungs, and nobody's paying the bill for it except for BC taxpayers at this moment.
Insult to injury.
Indeed.
This is a dumb question, but it looks the same, right? Like,
yeah.
Like if you're just watching a train go by, or if you're at the ferry and you see those piles, it looks the same.
It does look pretty much the same. Thermal coal has a higher dust content because it's a lower grade. It's not as compact as the metallurgical coal from BC mines.
Gotcha.
So you would have to be looking pretty closely to see those dust piles and dust clouds coming off. But yeah, essentially the same thing.
I was actually there at the ferry terminal the day that one of those bulk carriers plowed right through the conveyor belt that's supposed to load the coal. And it broke in half and dumped a bunch of coal in the water.
Oh, my goodness.
I was just like on the deck of the ferry and saw the aftermath.
Oh, my God.
I was just, yeah, it was a funny one. So, yeah, there's huge amounts of U.S. coal coming right past all that tourist traffic and right through White Rock.
Totally.
So you talk about this discrepancy in terms of the BC coal producers at least covering some of the, you know, they're offsetting a little bit of the social cost, basically, of their industry. And obviously that's not the case for the U.S. Companies. So where are the political parties at on this?
Well, as it stands now, thermal coal isn't really something that a lot of political parties are really digging into, aside from the BC Greens. Yes, I came up with my own puns.
That I should have just let it go and everybody could appreciate it. Instead, now it's awkward.
Oh, God.
Okay.
So this isn't necessarily like the number one issue on a lot of voters' minds. And so therefore, it's not necessarily the largest issue for some of the parties, although people in affected communities care a whole lot about this campaign. And I should know because I am a constituent in South Delta.
Right.
Right now, I think the Greens want to do whatever they can to stop thermal coal exports from the States coming through BC. The BC Liberals haven't told us where they stand. This is a policy. We're actually proposing a policy that I kind of go into a little bit of detail on in the op-ed. But this is something that all the parties have been briefed on.
Basically just make the U.S. coal producers pay their fair share.
Exactly.
Per ton.
Exactly. So that's what we're trying to get them to do. That's not something that the NDP is willing to say yes to on our candidate survey at this point. But this is something that some of the independent candidates potentially might support.
Okay. So so you're proposing that we get U.S. coal producers to pay their fair share, and so far not a ton of political uptake. But regardless of the election outcome, there's a huge court case coming up, right?
Exactly. On this
So what's the story there?
Yeah. So our partner groups, Voters Taking Action on Climate Change and Communities in Coal, as well as the cities of Surrey and New Westminster, are going to court against the port, contesting the port's approval of Fraser Surrey Dock's port permit. So Fraser Surrey Dock's needed a permit to start building and operating on port land. And our colleagues are arguing that there was already, like, that was a foregone conclusion and that the port was biased in their decision making. And all of the short public consultations that did occur were just not thorough enough to be significant. And though nearly everyone spoke against it's similar to what happened at Kinder Morgan side. But although most people who voiced their concerns said that they did not want this to happen, the port went ahead and approved the project. So in May, we're going to be in court represented by EcoJustice, trying to make sure that essentially if we win, the Fraser Surrey Docks will have to go back to the drawing board and look at getting a new permit all over. And it seems like at this point, because, you know, thermal coal is not really the number one thing that you want to export when you have limited port capacity and limited port land in Vancouver.
It's it's the bottom of the barrel.
It really is the bottom of the barrel. It's the bottom of the coal pit, and it's not worth exporting. It's not worth using finite resources on. So hopefully, if we win that court case, they'll just stop trying.
Pack up and go home.
Pack up and go back to the Powder River Basin. Yeah, and that would be great.
All right, well, good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Ari Ross, Dogwood's Beyond Coal campaigner, or as her notebook says, Coal Queen.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
You're listening to the Dogwood Podcast, and we've got one more interview for you this month. I want you to meet Mike Soron. You might know his name from his work as a climate organizer at Lead Now. Before that, he ran Sustainable SFU. And Mike has a passion for helping people organize to take back power over both their environment and democracy. And he's also Dogwood's newest provincial organizer. Welcome, Mike.
Oh, hi, Kai.
So here we are above an abandoned car wash. You've worked on some pretty high-profile campaigns. What did you think when you realized this was your new office?
Well, Dogwood is a pretty scrappy team, definitely. But, you know, it's a nice contrast to where the folks were up against to do most of their work, you know, cutting deals in glitzy hotel ballrooms in Houston or Calgary. And while I'm sure the ceviche and the champagne is better there, it's been a great place to get to work.
You're making me feel better already. So you mentioned Calgary. You grew up in Calgary, right?
I did, yeah.
How did you end up on the West Coast fighting a pipeline from Alberta?
Well, you know, like a lot of people who grew up in Alberta, my family enjoyed traveling to BC when I was young. So I fell in love with the people and the places out here, especially in the Lower Mainland. My grandparents lived in White Rock, so we'd spend summers visiting the island, we'd go to the interior. And so when I first met my partner in Calgary, our mutual love of the West Coast was a big part of our courtship. And so when we finally moved out here in 2009, I went to grad school at Simon Fraser University. And that's where I first saw the huge green fuel tanks on Burnaby Mountain. Mm-hmm. And so the more I learned about Kinder Morgan's tanker and pipeline expansion plans there, you know, the more reckless and unnecessary it all seemed. And so when I started hearing officials at Simon Fraser University starting to admit that they actually couldn't speak out about the dangers of Kinder Morgan's plans to campus because it might damage their relationships with politicians and donors, I knew something needed to change. And we need to get big business out of our politics and get to work on a clean energy economy, a better democracy. And I've been working on that for many years now.
Let me think about, like, when I talk about this with people in Alberta and I explain to them that the tank farm literally sits next to a university, blocking the only road on and off the mountain if there were ever a fire. Even in Calgary, it seems to me, they wouldn't put this kind of infrastructure next to the, you know, U of C football field.
Yeah, it really is outrageous that such a dangerous piece of infrastructure is right adjacent to a residential community, student residences, one of BC's biggest employers, Simon Fraser University.
Yeah, and literally like the little, it's where you incubate the future. That's where you train the people that are going to solve the problems we have today and like take us where we need to go. And you're going to incinerate them if there's ever a mistake.
Yeah, I think a lot of people on campus don't realize what's there. But when students and faculty and people who live on the mountain learn about just how much is at risk, it's really clear that this project should not proceed.
So tell me about the turf you're taking on with Dogwood.
Yeah, well, I'm working in the southern part of the Lower Mainland. So it's mainly Delta, White Rock, and Surrey. And these are places
your grandparents were.
Yeah, yeah, where my grandparents were when I was growing up. These are places that are already bearing like a huge burden of fossil fuel export and damage to public health and the environment to date. But you know, these are some of Canada's fastest growing places. It's an incredible natural setting. And we're nestled right up against our U.S. neighbor. American businesses have been turning these places into a kind of a sacrifice zone for their extraction and export plans. And while Dogwood's been long focused on thermal coal export down there, I'm really excited to start building local teams to work on our other campaigns. And so you've got to get out there and help people talk to one another, give them the tools and the power to phone bank, to go door to door, to have conversations on the street in what is a much, much wider turf, you know, some bigger ridings than where Dogwood is used to working. But what we're hearing is people are really excited and interested in, one, getting people out to vote in the upcoming election and making sure we make the most of our opportunity to get a government that's really going to work for us, but then also continue that work into the years ahead and make sure that no matter who forms government after May, that we hold them to account and get a better democracy and better decision making about these big projects.
You sound more optimistic than some other people I've talked to. What's your read on the provincial election?
Well, you know, I think some of my optimism comes from a bit of a longer-term focus, right? Like, I'm not putting all of our eggs into this one election, despite how important it is. I'm hearing people on the ground who, yeah, they're a little beleaguered, I think, about democracy. They're, you know, looking, say, at the last federal election, right? Folks who might have showed up, voted in many cases for the first time. Like a lot of the young people I've worked with through SFU were first-time voters recently. And we're excited about ending first past the post. We're excited about
You're saying.
Yeah, federally, right?
Yeah.
And so now when they're thinking ahead about participating in the provincial election, thinking about the broken promises from Trudeau, or, you know, even watching sort of the experience in the States and what's happened with Trump, people are getting a little cynical about politics. And it's clear that if we really want to make these big changes, it's up to us. It's up to citizens, voters, to really make sure politicians follow through on their commitments. And, you know, we take matters into our own hands using the tools that are available to us.
I like that expression that politicians aren't leaders, they're followers, right?
Yeah.
They're really not. Like, if we sit around and wait for politicians to solve this stuff, could be waiting a long time. How can people help out?
Well, in the short term, we've got this election. I mean, that is the clearest way for us to make a difference. So the first thing for people to do is make sure you're registered to vote with Elections BC. Make sure your friends and family are registered to vote. And then once that's covered, come and help Dogwood do the same across BC. We want to be having conversations with people from every corner of the province to talk about how we get clean air, land, water, and fix our democracy. So if you go to votebc.ca, we'd love to help you get to work, knocking on doors, talking to people on the streets, and helping us make thousands of phone calls over the next several weeks.
Which you can do from home.
Which you can do from home. That's right.
We've time constraints or mobility issues.
We've got great tools here, and we've got to be in touch with people who live all over BC. And you know, that means, yeah, using the newest digital tools available to us to have people call at home, to call with friends, and get out there and talk to as many people as possible.
Right on. Okay, thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, thanks, Guy.
That is Mike Soron, Dogwood's newest provincial organizer. And that's it for the podcast this time around. If you have ideas for next month, let us know. It's going to be a crazy few weeks. The election is May 9th. And listen, 3 months ago, I would have said, don't even bother placing a bet. Christy Clark has a, 5-to-1 fundraising advantage over her closest competitors. She will be running the province until doomsday. But 3 months ago, a lot of things hadn't happened. When she flip-flopped on the Kinder Morgan project in January after taking all that money from the pipeline backers, things started to come into focus. We realized, this is a government that has stopped listening to evidence. They've stopped listening to voters. Practically every decision they make can be traced back to big corporate donations, lobbying, or both. They've become cynical, greedy, and arrogant, and that is dangerous heading into an election, even if you do have all the money on your side. So at this point, I'd honestly say it's a coin toss. Anything could happen, and that's why it's so important to help boost voter turnout. If young people stay home, then yes, big money wins. All that micro-targeting, negative advertising, and voter suppression, it works by reinforcing people's cynicism. But you know what's a great antidote for apathy or despair? Anger. Righteous, goddamn anger at how these companies are treating our province and our people. And anger at the politicians who are just looking to make a buck selling our home off in pieces to these international corporate parasites. We have a chance in a few weeks to make those politicians sweat. And regardless of who wins, maybe if more than 55% of people vote this time, they won't be so inclined to ignore us. So please, join our Get Out the Vote team at votebc.ca. We have a proven method at Dogwood for getting people to the polls. It works like a hot damn. And we're going to run our biggest voter contact program yet, and I need you to be part of it. If big money carries the day and the pro-oil tanker party buys its way back into power, we'll be ready. We've got an awesome plan in the bag, so stick with us either way. VoteBC.ca. That's it for this month. I'm Kai Nagata. Keep your head up, BC. We've got a lot of work to do.